You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So, content warning for this next story. Due to the situation in Xinjiang, this topic does contain references to genocide, torture, and rape. So right now, there is mass detention and torture and systematic rape of the Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang under the Chinese Communist Party. A stuff documentary called Deleted came out earlier in the week, which I recommend, and it covers New Zealand's connection to the companies enabling this, such as surveillance company iFlytek, and also questions the New Zealand's trade relationships with China. But this is a problem because the New Zealand government has known about it for a while, and Uyghur Muslims are living in New Zealand and they're New Zealand citizens, and they've been trying to speak up, and it's been up to the media to uncover New Zealand investment ties which contribute to this persecution. So I talked to Professor Anne-Marie Brady from the University of Canterbury, who is a specialist in Chinese politics and is someone who has been trying to get it to the government's attention for a while. First, I asked Professor Brady about the history of Xinjiang and how it got to this point of seriously breaching human rights.
Well, Xinjiang, which means new territory or new colony, is an area of China in the northwest that's larger than France. It's borders the Central Asia, so you've got Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, even Afghanistan on its borders, and Russia too. It's strategically important to China because of that border location. It's also got strategic minerals. The indigenous peoples of this area are known as the Uyghur, and they are a Turkic race whose language is not the language of mainland China, or who speak, their national language is Mandarin Chinese, and there's different dialects of China. They have their own language, and it has its own written form. And the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party government, when it came to power in 1949, they initially politicized the rights of China's ethnic minorities. They previously China had not had a strong sense of ethnicity, but because of the ideology of the CCP about ethnicity, which built on the thinking of the Soviet Union about ethnicity, ethnic minorities in China were classified, you know, who was in what minority and so on, and then each minority was given nominal political rights. And so Xinjiang is called the Xinjiang Autonomous Region, and Tibet is the Tibetan Autonomous Region. And so this has served to further politicise and accentuate the sense of difference. And the CCP government has changed its ethnic policies and now wants to merge all the ethnicities to remove their linguistic and cultural differences. There's been a major project that has been going on for about 5 years now to force, first of all, was a forcing of bilingualism and preference on Mandarin Chinese in the education system, and now it's got much more than that. And so many Uyghurs did not speak Mandarin at all. I've travelled to Xinjiang myself, and I found that I'm a Mandarin Chinese speaker, and it was even the high schoolers, the younger generation, I found would not be comfortable speaking Mandarin, let alone the older generation. The CCP began to force large numbers of Uyghur into what they called re-education camps, but which we now know are much more closer to concentration camps. Not only were people being forced to learn Mandarin Chinese, they were being indoctrinated and Xi Jinping thought brainwashed, essentially. And we've now got evidence of systemic rape and torture. And conservative estimates of the numbers of people in the camps in Xinjiang is over a million, and many of them now have, and their children, even if they had family members to look after them, were sent to state orphanages, and many are now being moved into prison in their own, you know, and not for committing any crime as we would normally understand it. People who are artists or musicians who are upholders of Uyghur tradition have been sent to jail. So that's the background.
Yeah, and how does knowing all this impact New Zealand's relationship with China?
So there are, we have New Zealanders who are Uyghur, who have citizenship or residency here, and they have family members still in China, and there are New Zealanders who have travelled to Xinjiang and or have lived there for long periods of time. I know there are New Zealand missionaries, for example, who were working in Xinjiang for a very long time and got kicked out as part of the change in policies in China. There's been much stricter controls over foreigners going to Xinjiang as well. So we have quite a lot of threads between Xinjiang and New Zealand, and it's those stories of our Xinjiang Uyghur New Zealanders have been told more and more in our New Zealand media in the last 2 years as the extreme human rights situation has drawn international attention.
There's been a documentary by Stuff released a few days ago called Deleted. What has been the reaction to this documentary?
We can see from Stuff's reporting that the government seems to have already been reconsidering some aspects of their policy that connects to concerns that New Zealand companies who receive government funding through angel funds, and that they're looking at other policies. So it's very good that you know, this media now, with the work that Stuff has done in spotlighting this issue, that the government's responding. But I have to say, the government did have this information, has already had this information for a while. So I documented it in a parliamentary submission that was released last July, and I also mentioned it in an op-ed in 2018. And that shows the power of the media to get a response from the government. You know, you can raise things a few times, and we've seen other news outlets like News Hub and RNZ have also talked about the plight of our Uyghur New Zealanders. But you really need quite a concerted campaign and public, obvious public interest to get the government to change policies. And this is what we seem to be seeing here.
Yeah, is it frustrating as an academic to have to wait for that, you know, sensation, media attention and public interest to make changes in these areas?
It always takes a while to change public opinion. So I recognise that we've had a particular policy towards China, and that we need to make a change in that relationship. We need to get the balance right. And it takes a while for public opinion to catch up with experts and people who have first-hand experience. So that's pretty typical.
What actions are New Zealand taking compared to other countries? Because I know export trade is a massive part of our economy. Is that impacting the New Zealand government from making a stand here?
Well, our exporters are putting our government under a lot of pressure not to say anything that will offend China. And, you know, for the last 30, 40 years, many people have said our foreign policy is trade. But that is an exaggeration. I mean, we do not want to give up our values for our trading relationships. And also, if we don't take a stand on important issues like this extreme abuse of human rights, which meets the definition of the United Nations law on what is genocide, then we are standing by while the international norms are ignored, and that is not good for us as a small state. We want to uphold the international rules-based order. So I think that New Zealand has shown that it can get through these kind of difficulties where there are economic interests involved. And I know that the government is trying hard to, is talking a lot about trade diversification, and its plans for the future are all about expanding new markets. But it takes so that we ease that dependency and sometimes the perceived dependency on the China market. So it's going to take a while to get to where we want to go, but it's understood that it's not healthy for New Zealand at any time to be over-dependent on one market, particularly a market where access depends on the political view of your trading partner, whether they think you're politically acceptable or not.
That was Professor Anne-Marie Brady, specialist in Chinese politics from the University of Canterbury.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.